This is the Queensland Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
A very good afternoon from Warwick, southern Queensland this afternoon. Day three of the Polo Cross World Cup is underway. We thought we'd join in. It's a week-long celebration. It's a horse sport, actually, which dates back to 1938. Ali Felton-Taylor, she's co-hosting with me today. Alice, they don't often let us pick up the microphone together. I just don't know why. What could possibly go wrong, Ali Felton-Taylor?
What could possibly go wrong, Amy Phillips? Well, the game of Polo Cross, as it's being played by the best teams in the world here this week, it was developed by Edward Hurst and his wife from Sydney. Put simply, a cross between netball and lacrosse. Some say it's even a bit like rugby union. It's a fast and furious game. It requires one hand on the reins, the other to swing a stick, and a heck of a lot of hanging on with those legs.
You can tell Arles has actually played polo cross. We're going to bring you today some of the world's best plays. We're going to meet a star of the four-legged kind. She beats all other stars here, and we'll be keeping our eye on the scoreboard for you. But also in the theme of horses, we're going to Far North Queensland, where the National Camp Draft Finals have kicked off today. So all about the ponies. And Ali, you were talking about horse flesh earlier. Queensland's got it covered this week.
Equine quadrupeds, absolutely, Aim. It's all happening. You can probably hear the commentary in the background. The Interstate Men's match, it's just kicked off. New South Wales is playing Victoria. We hope to bring you the results of that on the program as well.
Now, Ali Felton-Taylor, you're going to kick things off. You have got a man regarded widely as Mr. Polo Cross.
He's going to hate me saying that, but he is Mr. Polo Cross indeed. We were just talking some 57 seasons in a row. I think perhaps, have you notched up 57 yet, Les Fraser?
I have, Ali, yes, 57.
Mr. Les Fraser, he's the chair of the Polo Cross World Cup Organising Committee. But the World Cup's really been your brainchild, hasn't it, in essence? Morgan Park, it's really purpose-built. Obviously, the event was sent overseas for a couple of years, but it's back here now. You live and breathe the sport, but could you dream that it was going to be this big?
Well, Harley, we work towards it. Our World Cup committee's put a lot of work into creating this event, and full credit to them and the members of the Warwick Polo Cross Club. It's falling into place. We always hoped that it would be a big event. It's an Australian-made sport, developed here in Australia, and we consider the World Cup, yeah, Australia the home of the World Cup, but in saying that, we had to go global for the sport. And this event has grown in stature since 2003. You know, when we kicked it off in 2003, we all thought this is a one-off. We came back in 2007, and it was an excellent event. To the UK in 2011, another great event. South Africa in 2015, and the event has just grown enormously. The international people love the event. The local people, the national people here in Australia love the event. We've got the Interstate Series running in parallel with the World Cup. So my opinion is that we've got the best polo cross players in the world competing here over the next week.
And time will tell, indeed. Well, we'll see. Obviously, the sheer size of the event is one you can measure for depth and growth. But apart from this facility, which was purpose-built, what about the horses, some specifically bred for this sport? It's really been a game-changer, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been, Ali. The polo cross horse now specifically bred, like in the last 15 years, in association with the Australian Stock Horse Society, we've put together some magnificent polo cross horses. We now monitor our breeding, and they're specifically bred to play the game. All horse sports have really gone forward, and most of the big horse sports are specifically breeding horses to suit their discipline, and we've gone up that track, and it's been tremendous, and the quality of the horse shows out here. I think the 128, we started with 192 horses, and over the last 8 months we've trimmed them back to 140, and we lost a couple of horses in the week leading up to the cup, so we ended up with 137, 128 playing horses and 9 pool horses. The quality of these horses is unbelievable, and the owners of these horses have done a wonderful job. They've prepared these horses, landed them here in Warwick, ready to play world-class polo cross, and that's what they're doing.
I heard the captain of the South African team, obviously the reigning world champions, make a compliment saying that Australia's horses are specifically bred for the sport. What about horses' welfare? How do you guarantee that?
Oh, we've got a great system in place here. We have a vet on hand 24/7. We have 8 horse coordinators. They're responsible for their 16 horses in each pool. Every country draws a pool of 16 horses. So a horse coordinator is responsible for that, and along with him, he's got 7 volunteers that look after the horses day and night. Those horses specifically looked after by the volunteers, plus the horse coordinator who answers all questions regarding the horses.
What about player welfare? I understand an Aussie rider took a tumble earlier today. All okay?
Yes, all okay. Whether she'll play, I don't know. Whether she'll play in the Australian team later in the week, I don't know. But I think she's all right, and I'd like to wish her all the very best. But I think she's all right.
Les Fraser, back to the depth of the sport. Obviously, there are saddles here as well that are purpose-built for playing polo cross. When you started, you would have just thrown anything on and got amongst it.
Yeah, well, you're right, Arlie. When we first started to play the game, it was just a matter of calling into a farmer and saying, I like your horse, can we borrow your horse to play polo cross on? Yeah, and we found whatever saddle we could get hold of. But it's really gone forward now where the saddles are built specifically for the game. And as I said earlier to you and you mentioned to me, the horses are bred specifically for the game. The horse sports, as I said earlier, the horse sports in general have just improved the quality of the horse and the quality of the rider. We're now having polo cross schools where coaches are travelling all over the country, all over the world, to coach polo cross players, and it's improved the standard of the horse and the standard of the rider.
In the bush, in terms of horse sports, you could take your pick between two, possibly camp drafting, and we're heading up to Greenvale very soon. But of course, polo cross too. Is it, what's it like? Is it league versus union? Is it Vegemite versus Promite? If you're a polo cross player, always a polo cross player, or do you draft as well?
No, not necessarily. We've got quite a few of our polo cross players that intertwine between camp drafting and polo cross. But bearing in mind, we need people to ride horses, and the wonderful thing about camp drafting and polo cross and eventing and pony club is that they all ride horses, and that's really what we need to do. We're very lucky here in Australia that we can ride a horse anytime, anywhere, basically wherever we like. I've got some friends that live in Sydney and they ride in Sydney. They hire horses and ride in Sydney, ride in the park in Sydney, and it's one of the heritages we've had, and it's wonderful to be able to see all these horse sports doing so well. Basically, they've just exploded in Australia in the last decade, haven't they?
Look, it has indeed, and we're going to talk camp drafting a little later on. But in terms of polo cross, what sets it aside is the fact there's that partnership between a horse and rider, but also you've got teammates as well?
Yeah, it is a team sport, and of course, once again, we consider team sports one of the greatest learners, aren't they? They're one of the greatest teachers, aren't they, for children and people. Team sports are a wonderful thing, but bearing in mind that we are king of the one horse sports, one horse, one player, and that's probably the thing that sets our game apart from all the other horse sports, is that we're one horse, one player, and we've built our game on it over the last 60 odd years, and it's been successful. We've come from cow paddocks down the backyards to playing World Cups under lights on turf fields, and that's been basically all built about the clubs and the one horse, one player.
Les Fraser, you're very passionate. Thank you so much. It's 13 past 12 on the Queensland Country Hour. Mr. Polo Cross himself has been here with us, Amy Phillips, and we're going to be talking polo cross for the next little bit.
We certainly are. Then a bit of camp drafting. Also, Arlie, not to forget the weather. There's been amazing rain in southwest Queensland. It's nearly 12:15.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Broadcasting live from right next to the canteen here at the World Cup Polo Cross. Now, let's talk Tin Tacs. Having lost in the final for the past two World Cups, the Australians, they're keen to reclaim the championships on home turf this year. But now to do that, they're going to have to get past South Africa. That side are the current world champions. Plenty of murmurs around the grounds after the Kiwis actually beat the South Africans yesterday afternoon. Studying that form guide has been former Australian coach, 2 times World Cup winner, g'day Ross Shepherd from Killarney.
Morning, Ali.
Each day, Ross, you give predictions on the next round of World Cup games in a little newsletter, I think it's called Chukka Chats, the Shepherd Says section. Now, Zimbabwe just played the US. How would you rate that game?
Well, it was an excellent game. Obviously, USA, they came out very strong today. After yesterday's results, I think that Zimbabwe were probably expected to beat the USA very comfortably, and that hasn't happened today. The USA come out very strong. They had a point to prove. They were well beaten by Australia at one stage during the competition, and they've obviously come out and wanted to make their mark on the competition. They're a great team, and they've done very well. There was only two goals difference in it, and it was a great game right till the end.
There's been some really tight matches. Let's actually get the thoughts of the Zimbabwe captain. Lydia Burton actually grabbed Graham Keith just as he finished the game a short while ago.
No, good. As always, it's nice to win a game. We've lost two so far, and it's good to get one under our belt and looking forward to the semis or the whatever game forward, yeah.
That didn't look like an easy win to me, though.
Sure, America really brought it to us. We didn't expect it, and great on them. They're playing great play at Polacross.
How are you going so far on your horse? You know, new environment. How's it all going?
It's been really tough. It's tough to come out to Australia and ride different horses. They ride a bit different here. So it's been a big learning curve for us, and we're thoroughly enjoying it here.
How long did it take you to adjust to your horse?
Yeah, it's taken a full week, but we're getting better and better as we play. So yeah, we're working them out and it's coming together. Maybe a little bit too late.
First win of the tournament. Congratulations and thanks for speaking with us.
No problem. Thanks, Australia, for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure. That Zimbabwe captain, is it Keith Graham? Graham Keith. God, that's rude of me. Graham Keith, he's the Zimbabwe captain, just had a win against the USA. And let's actually clarify that for our listeners, Ross Shepherd. Every international player has actually been given a horse that the Australian team and the wider Australian community has put together for them. How were these horses delegated amongst the teams?
Well, what happens is that the our horse committee, they put the horses into pools of 16 horses. Every country gets 16 horses, and they just put them into pools of 16 horses. And then when the horse draw comes around, which it happened last Monday, each country draws a number out of a hat, and they're allocated a team of a pool of horses, and that's their 16 horses for the tournament. If a horse goes lame, they don't get a replacement, so that's an encouragement for the teams. The reason for that is it encourages the teams to look after their horses and look towards their welfare.
And I learnt yesterday the feeding, the husbandry of that animal is entirely the team's responsibility. The owners of those horses practically hand them over in completion for this week.
Yeah, that's right. The owners aren't allowed to go near their horses again once they go into the competition. And the horse volunteers and the horse each coordinator for each country, they completely handle the feeding, the walking. That's completely done by them. It's the owners just hand them over, and then when the competition's finished on Sunday, they come and pick them up. And these countries, they're very passionate about looking after the horses. I've heard one of the countries say they've even made the comment that they want the horses to go back to their owners in better condition than what they got them.
Gee, that it makes me admire the spirit of this game, though, and this World Cup.
Well, that's right. It's and the horses are very important in the game, and over the time, as the game has evolved, the countries have all realised that they've got to, for the game to go ahead and to go to the level that it's gone here this weekend, it's all based around horses, and we need the horses to be lent by these passionate owners. They're their pride and joy, and if they're not looked after, they don't want to lend them, and that's why we've got these good horses here. The countries are passionate about looking after them.
Later on in the country hour, we're going to actually talk to one very passionate owner of a horse that's quite special to her. That coming up. Let's get back to the form guide, though. Zimbabwe, we just said, played the USA. New Zealand are to play Ireland this afternoon. Your thoughts on that competition this afternoon?
Once again, I'm just about over making predictions the way the results have gone in this competition. All the heavyweights are being beaten. But after yesterday, I would have thought that New Zealand, after their magnificent performance yesterday to beat the world-class team of South Africa, who are rated number one here and were favourites to win the Cup, I think that they're now certainties, I think, to beat Ireland. There would be no doubt about that, I think.
New Zealand seemed to have done very well. There was an upset yesterday. Tell us about that involving New Zealand.
Yeah, that's right. They played South Africa yesterday afternoon. As I said, South Africa are the real heavyweights. They're the South Africa are the team that everybody looks to beat. And I think that's one of the problems that South Africa may have encountered here is that everybody wants to beat South Africa. Everybody's after them. And I think that they, when the pressure went on them yesterday, I don't think South Africa handled the pressure very well. New Zealand came out very strong. They to put it mildly, they ruffled the South Africans up. And they had trouble handling that sort of polo cross. The last 8 years that they've been playing World Cup polo cross, they've been allowed to do what they want to do. And the New Zealanders decided to change that, and they roughed them up and they didn't handle it, and they just hung in. They had quite a good lead in one stage, New Zealand, though I think they had South Africa down 10-2 at one stage in the game. And to South Africa's credit, they clawed back into the game, and towards the end of it, it was very, very close. But New Zealand were just determined they weren't going to get beaten, and they just hung in.
We're going to hear from Russell Tye about that grit and determination. Lydia Burton caught up with him after yesterday afternoon's game.
Oh, we're pretty pleased with the win, but we'll have to regroup, and we've got another game tomorrow against Ireland, and then we go into the quarters from there. So, yeah, this is just one step on the ladder.
You can feel the energy on the field right now. There's music pumping, there's high fives, you know, cheers.
Oh, yeah.
How are you feeling in this very moment?
Oh, I'm pretty pumped up. The crowd was really awesome today. We really lifted with the crowd right behind us, and there's nothing like an upset in a game. We came in as underdogs, and when you're an underdog, you've got nothing to lose. So.
Absolutely. So South Africa's a defending champion.
Yeah, they are. They've won the last two World Cups, which comes around every 4 years. So, we're pretty chuffed with today.
Do you think it puts you in a good position going forward?
Oh, yes, it does. But, yeah, the job's only half done at the moment. So, we're just going to have to regroup and go back out even harder on the weekend. So, yeah.
How stiff was the competition today?
Oh, yeah, they've set the standard in polocross for a number of years now. They play an outstanding game. They've got outstanding racket skills and they're very good horsemen. So to give them a nudge today, we're really proud of that.
That is Russell Tye. As you can hear, he's a Kiwi and he's the captain of the Kiwi side. Ross Shepherd, how has South Africa come to be the team to beat? You know, polo cross has originated in Australia, but Zimbabwe, Zambia and South Africa are all pretty significant teams. Why is it that, you know, Africa like this game?
Well, I think it comes back to the fact that Africans, South Africans and Africans in general, are very, very committed. They're very passionate about their sport. It doesn't matter what sport you look at, whether it's rugby union or whatever they play, they're always very competitive, they're always determined. But in the polo cross, which is all I can really comment on, these South African players are very committed. I think they put a lot of time and effort into their polo cross. They do a lot of riding, and they're very athletic people. It's one of the things that I've noticed here with the African players in this World Cup is the athleticism of the people there. They seem to me to be built a little bit differently to the Europeans, the Australians. And I think it makes them that, I think it just gives them that extra little bit of agility, and their ball skills are just out of this world. They're just out of this world. They are obviously the best ball handlers in this game. They are incredible, some of the things that they can do. And in saying that, every other country, I'm amazed at how the World Cup competition has improved, particularly in the last 4 or 5 years. And once again, and particularly in the ladies' competition, the ladies here are just unbelievable. When we first started the first World Cup here in 2003, the World Cup playing ladies were only a very average players. I'm probably being a little bit critical there, but the way that they have improved over the time, it is just unbelievable. As Les Fraser said, a lot of these countries are getting coaches. There's coaches going all over the world. I see some of the countries here. I know that Zimbabwe have a South African coach. I think the US might have a South African coach. And I have a funny feeling there's another country that have a South African coach. And I think it's helped the standard of World Cup polo cross tremendously. And the result we had here yesterday with New Zealand over South Africa, that was an upset that our World Cup needed to get people right on the... The crowd was amazing, and that was the upset that we needed to get people talking about the polo cross here this week.
Right, let's go back to the Aussies. They've got a day off today, which might be a bit fortunate considering one of the players had a buster, some time to recover. I've heard that they're the firm favourite to win, but the way you just talked about South Africa makes me wonder. What are your thoughts?
There's no doubt after yesterday, I think that Australia, I'd be quite happy to say that Australia are firm favourites now for the World Cup, particularly to make the final. But in sport, there's no certainties in sport. And I have a theory that champion teams find a way. And there's no doubt in my mind that South Africa and Zimbabwe aren't out of this competition. They can still, the way the draw works, they can still work their way back into the final. But as I said, Australia, I would be quite happy to make them firm favourites. I am a little bit concerned that they haven't really had a lot of pressure put on them in this World Cup campaign yet. And as I said, there's no certainties in sport. And I wouldn't discount the African countries one bit.
The way you talk, Ross Shepherd, I can see the passion that you have for polo cross. You've been playing and coaching for many years. One final question. You're a farmer from Killarney, also the grounds person here at Morgan Park. Everyone's telling us it's a green drought. How are things in this neck of the woods?
Yeah, that's right. I think we're no different to any other part of Eastern Australia. We're all suffering a green drought. We're probably not as badly off as some. But yeah, you can only just... Farming's one of those things. You have your ups, you have your downs. There seems to be now more downs than ups. But we just keep hanging in. We're hoping for rain at the moment, after the World Cup's over, I might add. But hopefully that'll come, and we'll just keep poking away like every farmer does.
And you'll be looking to plant some wheat?
Yeah, we'll be planting wheat, barley, that sort of thing. It's a little bit early for us just yet. We've planted oats. We're hoping for rain for that. But yeah, down the track, we're hoping our climatologists aren't giving us much hope with rain, but they're never right. They're like my predictions in the Polo Cross World Cup. They don't seem to come to fruition.
Well, Southwest Queensland is today cheering. There's been some amazing rain out there, so hopefully it's on its way to your neck of the woods at Killarney. Ross Shepherd, thank you for your insight. I hope you're right. I hope the Aussies do get up on home turf. We appreciate your time. It's 27 past 12 on the Country Hour.
You're listening to the Queensland Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
We're soon going to be heading to the news and then the weather, but an Australian poet is among the crowd here at the Polo Cross. Marco Gliori has been at a World Cup before, right here at Warwick, and put pen to paper about the event. Let's take a listen to the poem, Polo Cross, The Dream.
On a misty autumn morning, long before first light appears, in a horse yard stomps a gelding, eyes ablaze, attentive ears, while his rider, sleeping lightly, stirs their restless in the dark from a dream that speaks of battle on a field at Morgan Park. Now their destiny awaits them, and they eagerly embrace every moment in the saddle, every second of the chase, riding waves of sheer commitment over lusty seas they cross for their crack at domination in the world of polo cross. Years of training, smoking embers, now rekindled in each game, as the challenge stokes the campfire, sparks of skill ignite the flame, and both horse and rider blazing, charge off fearless to the fray. It's a polo cross inferno, and it's raging out our way. Hear them rattle past, relentless, as they prime a fierce attack. Wielding sticks, they swarm opponents like a mozzie on your back. Clinging on in wild abandon, turning quickly on their coins, hunting down escaping riders, aching legs and cramping loins, flying windmills on the paddock, dusty riders off the bit, spurring hardly even needed as these horses show their grit. Teammates backing up and bumping, scooping balls, they're on a roll. And the climax comes when number one lets fly and scores a goal. Catch the fever, running rampant through the veins of those who see something vital in this contest for the game's supremacy, where respect is earned regardless of a victory or a loss by the characters who climb aboard to give us Polo Cross. So join us on the sidelines, so damn close we cringe and scheme as we will our countries onwards to the crest of one fine dream that is realised as the crowd stands for the presentation's gloss and the winner's anthem echoes through the world of Polo Cross.
Marco Gliori written that poem called Polo Cross the Dream, written especially for this event. That's a lovely poem. I really like the line, catch the fever, running rampant through the veins of those who see. Lydia Burton and I got here yesterday afternoon. And I tell you what, it'll be a job to get us away. It's so inspiring and even catching this game. It's at 12:30. Let's get some news headlines and then the weather. G'day, Jody Gunders, back at the studio.
G'day, Amy. Yes, back at the studio. Hoping to head down on the weekend, though. Let's check the news headlines, though. Questions regarding the sale of Queensland Water to the government in 2017 continue to pepper the federal election campaign. A short time ago in Sydney, Labor's water spokesman Tony Burke announced if elected, it would conduct an inquiry into the 2017 deal with the powers of a royal commission. Northern Territory pastoralist Sterling Buntine has bought another property from Consolidated Pastoral Company. He's purchased the Central Queensland aggregation known as Comley Station, reportedly for around $50 million. And authorities in South Africa say more than 30 people are now known to have died in flooding in the port of Durban in the east of the country. It's been caused by heavy rains that began on Monday. South African military personnel have been dispatched to help in rescue and evacuation efforts. More news, Amy, coming up at 1.
Jody Gunders, I highly recommend you get yourself and your family down here. Let's talk weather because, my God, there's been some great rain in southern Queensland. A very good afternoon to senior forecaster Lauren Paddy. How are you?
Good, thank you. Good afternoon.
Lauren, who can expect rain today? Where is that system moving?
Yes, we've seen some fantastic rain for the southern interior overnight in particular. Between Tallaville and Roma picked up the most. They picked up about 149 millimetres out there and some more widespread rain too down in the Maranoa. Unfortunately, as that system moves east, it weakens rapidly through the rest of the day. So while we expect to see some more rainfall around the Central Highlands and the northern parts of the Maranoa today, as it moves eastwards, it starts to weaken. So the Darling Downs and Granabout miss out, and it does move to the north, so we still expect to see some rainfall continuing around the Central Highlands and Coalfields, also the northwest, and mainly around the Central Coast. So the Central Coast is where we're seeing some rainfall start to pick up through today thanks to a coastal trough there. We expect that to continue into tomorrow as well. So it's an easing trend in terms of the rainfall, but there's still a little bit out there, and we still have a number of gauges ticking over through today.
The tropical north is expecting rain all this week. What can the likes of Mackay expect?
Yeah, so the tropical north is where we expect to see the focus of rainfall. So through the rest of today, we should easily see in excess of 40-odd millimetres. Today, we could see some isolated falls getting up around that 80, 90 millimetres. And into tomorrow, it does depend a little bit on how much a coastal trough deepens, but I expect similar totals, if not a little bit more, into tomorrow. Also, the north tropical coast between the usual place of around Cairns to Townsville. Expect to see some good falls up there. Not quite as high, so around the 20 to 30 millimetres and maybe a little bit more, but not quite as high there. Still some good showers around the north tropical coast as well.
And what about coastal waters? Are they trying to settle down?
In terms of the season swell, they are trying to settle down. We still have generally east to southeasterly winds at the moment. Expect that to continue for the days on end, really. We have one high replacing another high. So days on end of southeasterly winds. But the season swells, which were pretty rough over the weekend, so we had a hazardous surf warning out over the weekend, are starting to slowly ease as we speak. So there's still a little bit of easterly swell out there, but it'll be a gradual decline. So it'll take a few days for that to ease back to normal.
And finally, Lauren Paddy, I'm in southern Queensland. What could people attending the World Cup Polocross expect from the Warwick area in terms of weather?
In the Warwick area, there's a little bit of cloud about you guys at the moment, but nothing much to speak of. Most of the weather is to the north and west of you guys and also to the east. There's a few little showers about, so mostly just a little bit of cloud about, but largely pretty good weather to be outside around the Warwick region today.
And the other half of Queensland's horse-mad people are up at Greenvale in far north Queensland. What weather could they expect for the National Camp Draft Finals?
Oh, I didn't know that one was on. Far North Queensland, aren't expecting a great deal for you guys. There's a couple of showers really close to the coast, so similar sort of story up there, a little bit of cloud about, but nothing too exciting for the far north.
Lauren, Patty, stick around and listen to our reporters who are going to be broadcasting from there in just a moment. The National Camp Draft Finals in Greenvale all this week. Thank you for your time.
No problem. Thanks.
Let's go there now, actually. Let's head to Greenvale, where that horse sport we've been talking about, camp drafting, as popular as polo cross, is having its national finals. Our Tropical North and North Queensland rural reporters hit the road yesterday and got to Greenvale, Mel Groves and Tom Major. G'day, guys.
Yeah, g'day, Amy. Yep, keeping in line with today's theme of beloved horse sports, we're here in Greenvale, which is about 3 hours northwest of Townsville. And while Greenvale may be a fairly small town usually, the competition certainly isn't. There's around 250 competitors for 1,200 runs over 4 days and 2,300 head of cattle, all in a town that usually has an average population of 150 people. And I'm here with Tom Major. It is the National Camp Drafting Finals. Tom, how are you finding Greenvale?
Look, it's a fantastic little town. I've been here many times myself as the North Queensland Rural Reporter, but I've never seen quite this many rigs, horses, people. It's just absolutely turned into a little town of itself, the camp drafting grounds here, and a fantastic thing to see for such a small community, a real boost to the economy, I imagine. And certainly with the closure of the nickel mines here in the 90s, the place turned into, well, something of a smaller kind of, quieter kind of place, but certainly not for the next few days. Hayley Condon is from the Greenvale Camp Draft Committee. And Hayley, just how much goes into organising such a huge event in such a small town?
A lot of work goes into it with a lot of different people, so we all get in and do it together and it gets done pretty well.
Tell me about some of the changes you've had to make to accommodate the hundreds of competitors here.
Well, we did a big power upgrade. We put in new taps and hoses so that everyone had water. We actually did a lot to the ground so we could accommodate for more people and bigger trucks, obviously, because more horses, more competitors, yeah.
Were you expecting this many people? It seems like there's hundreds of caravans and rigs here.
Well, we did expect a few because it is the final, so you need to expect as many as you can. So we were all preparing and ourselves for a big heap of people. So, yeah, it's a good turnout, I reckon.
And what are some of the prizes on offer? It's a pretty big event, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got, it's big sponsorship. We have a lot of sponsorship and we the prize money is up to $40,000. And we've got bridles, rugs, everyone gets a buckle. We've got a fireplace, we've got cowhides, have got, you name it, we got it.
Hayley Condon from the Greenvale Camp Draft Committee, thanks so much for joining us here on the Country Hour, live from the Greenvale Camp Draft, the national finals of the Australian Camp Draft Association. Pretty big event for a small town, and 250 competitors, as we heard before, certainly lots and lots of action to happen over the next 4 days. Mel, exactly what do you think makes such a huge event like this possible? It seems like camp drafting, it's really getting bigger and bigger every year.
Well, that's exactly right, Tom. I actually spoke to the Australian Camp Drafting Association's president, Hugh Philp, about that exact thing when we rolled into town yesterday, and here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I don't think it could be much better. The season's wonderful up here. There's water, plenty of grass, so people are in good spirits. And when I drove in here on Sunday afternoon, the work that the committee have put in with the ground, it's painting and just incredible. So I really look forward to it.
There's a fair few vehicles here. There's a lot of horses. How big does this final compare to some of the others you've had over the years?
Yeah, look, this final will compare to any of our finals as one of the biggest we've had. We've got 1,250 first-round nominations this weekend. We've got 330 people going to our dinner on Saturday night, which is a huge roll-up. Usually 200, 250 is a good turnout. So, yeah, the numbers are there. There's been very little scratchings. And, yeah, I just can't wait till it gets started tomorrow morning.
There's been actually a little bit of discussion around camp drafting. It's really growing in popularity. Why do you think that is?
I think people, especially in the bush, they need a break and get away. And a lot of people use their horses for their work and mustering, and it's a good extension of what they do. And also people are coming into the sport from towns and cities, just want to get out, take their kids. It's a great family sport. Mum, dad, the kids all get involved. And it's the same here this weekend, right, from juveniles to people in their 70s competing here at our finals.
Certainly not a cheap sport, so...
it's not a cheap sport, but, I don't know what you compare it to, but we've got to spend our money on something.
Absolutely. And also the other discussion that's been around cam drafting lately is there's actually been a few different competitions cancelled around Queensland. Why has that been?
Yeah, look, I think Queensland's probably seen one of the most widespread droughts into New South Wales. Northern Territory still in drought in the last 3 years, definitely, and over the last 10 years. It's been very random seasons, and that's taken its toll. And this year, I think people had had enough. They just wanted to look after things at home and get everything on track there. And we have had recent rains all over, and a lot of our events that were called off have been postponed to another date, so they're coming back on now. Mm. But yeah, it's still an issue with how many are being cancelled, we just got to hang in there. And obviously camp drafting relies on good cattle and being in good condition, and we're not going to run events unless the cattle are up for that. So it's really important that the seasons get back on track for everyone and everything they do.
The season is looking pretty good around here at the moment, but it hasn't been the same elsewhere. How did you go finding cattle for this event?
Yeah, look, I was up here last year, and Blair and JC Angus donated all the cattle here from Kimberley Red and Carpentaria Downs, and they committed 12 months ago that they'd be able to bring in the 2,300 head of cattle that we need this weekend. So they've got one line of heifers, and it's a tremendous effort from them and their family and all their workers and the committee to do that. So we're very lucky. One vendor committed to that from a fair way out, and then with the good season that they've had around here, that confirmed it pretty much 3 months ago that this finals would go ahead.
That was Hugh Philp, the president of the Australian Camp Draft Association, speaking there to Mel Groves yesterday. And Hugh's coming from Roma, way down in southern Queensland. But some are even further travelled, including my next guest, Craig McNabb, who's come all the way from Moama. In case you don't know exactly where that is, it's down on the New South Wales and Victorian border, just over the mighty Murray River from Echuca. And what makes you come such a far way for such an event, Craig?
Just the love of the sport, and we travel up to this part of the country every year when our season finishes, which is about April. And it goes from October till about April, and then it starts to get a bit cold at home, so we head up to here, up to this country.
We get a lot of grey nomads and refugees from the cold southern winter, but not quite as many of them come with a huge truck full of horses like you, Craig. Tell me about some of the logistics of actually getting that many animals and yourself and your family up here.
Well, it all works fairly easy. They're well-travelled horses. We've been doing this for about 5 years now, and we've travelled as far as the Kimberleys and Kununurra Horse Creek with most of the horses that we've still got on board now, so the travelling doesn't worry them. We put a little car up the front so that because we're away for about 7 months, and it's all well set up, and we thoroughly enjoy it.
7 months on the road, that must be a lot of events.
I'm not quite sure how many events we do, but we have a weekend or two off and stay with people, friends on their stations, and give that a bit of a hand to them. It's all good.
How long have you been camp drafting for, Craig?
This is our sixth year, and Carolyn, my wife, was a show jumper. My background was racehorses, but this beats it all. It's a lot of fun.
What is it about camp drafting that really drew you in?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, it's the horses, and then again, we're in the cattle industry, so it's the cattle. But most of all, it's the people. The people. Every weekend, you're with your mates from all over Australia, especially at an event like this. So I'd have to say most of all the people.
Now, we know North Queensland has had its fair share of trying moments over the past few months with the floods and so on. You have come up as well to support some of those charities, I understand.
Yes, we came up and did Sisters of the North at Concurry, and that was a great event, and went off really well.
Tell me about some of the horses you've brought. What are you hoping for at this particular event?
To win. To win. But if your horse goes well, we're happy with that. But yeah, the ultimate goal is to win.
Now, the competition kicks off this morning, and we're hearing already some people have done their runs for the day. When do you start your ride?
My first run is at 159, and Carolyn's is about 137. And so we'll have probably three runs today, and then the rest of the week.
Now, tell me a little bit about the situation back home. We know that the drought has been biting pretty hard in southern New South Wales and Victoria. It must be a little bit of a worry to be leaving your livestock at the moment with the situation.
Well, we've had to destock our places. All our cattle are now are away up in the mountains at Tumut on adjustment. It's the first time in our history that we've had to do that. So we've got no stock at home at all at the minute. We do have managers at home managing the properties, but the pressure's off. We've got our cattle away until Christmas, and we've got our first bit of rain on our breeder block at Ivanhoe 2 days ago, which was 2 inches, so that's a good start. But it's the worst drought that we've been in.
Yeah, great to hear that some rain has fallen on that terribly droughted country down south, particularly in those areas that have really received very little rain over the past couple of years. Craig McNabb from Southern New South Wales, thanks so much for speaking to us here at the Country Hour live outside broadcast. In Greenvale, sunny Greenvale most of the time, but a little bit on the overcast side today, Mel. But the competition has not been dampened one bit by this slight overcast weather and a few drops of rain even before. Three more days of this huge competition to go, and some long days as well, 12 hours worth of eventing on each particular day, which really does make for a very action-packed next few days here in Greenvale.
Absolutely. It was quite the early start this morning. People started competing from about 5:30 this morning, and of course they were warming up from about 5 a.m. So it was a very early start. So there are also a very big couple of days ahead for the competitors. So good luck to everyone who is here in Greenvale competing, and we'll see you all at the bar later.
We've had a fantastic morning and early afternoon here, and the bar will certainly be a hive of activity later on. Right now, Amy, it's back to you in Warwick. Thanks so much for listening to us here in Greenvale.
I think I might make my way to the bar too a bit later, but don't tell the boss. You're back at Warwick now with me, Amy Phillips, at Australia's most widely one of Australia's most widely played horse sports, but that would be competing with you, Tom and Mel. We're back here at the World Cup Polo Cross. Now, there's one horse that I want to tell you about. She's a 13-year-old baldy brown mare with a blaze down her face. She's actually a bit of a living legend, and her name is Percussion. She's headstrong, bloody headstrong, apparently, according to her owner, Sarah Grills, from Berrigoon Stud near Holbrook in New South Wales. Percussion is an Australian stock horse mare, and she's already making her mark here at the World Cup. She's been balloted out to the New Zealand team, who used her talent to her advantage and their advantage yesterday to beat South Africa, the reigning champions. She was also awarded Horse of the Match on Monday. I went and had a chat with Sarah Grills about Percussion. I caught up with her while Percussion was being sponged down.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. She's achieved a lot so far. She's only 13, and she has played 4 nationals so far. This is her first World Cup. She normally is partnered with our nephew Abbott Grills, and she's been very good.
I understand she's been drawn into the New Zealand team pool.
Yep.
Obviously, you just watched them play and win against South Africa. Do you believe she played a role?
She certainly did. She was very, very good. They played her up the front today, which is in the number one position with the same rider on her. The game they played yesterday, she actually started out the back in the three and then went up to the front. But she's pretty versatile, but she's certainly suited to goal throwing.
And tell me more about goal throwing. What kind of a skill does that require the horse to have?
A lot of speed and agility, so the ability to go very, very fast and stop quickly, and also have a lot of athletic ability. And they've got to be tough. Like, this mare will take them on and want to win.
Will she?
Yeah.
And when you say pull up quickly, is that a direction that the rider gives them from the mouth?
Yes, definitely. But also, a lot of horses, they know what the ball is, and if the ball's behind them, they're stopping to get back to it. They're pretty intelligent, yeah.
Abbott obviously rides her, Abbott Grills, your nephew, he's the Australian captain. What does he like about her, do you think?
Same thing. She has got phenomenal speed, and she's the sort of mare that can start off a bit sort of itchy and twitchy in the first couple of games, but when you walk through a tournament, she sort of gets better and better and better. So for men's competition, that's unreal, but we decided to put her in the girls' pool here.
What's it like to give her over to another team, to another country? It's part and parcel of the World Cup, and you very kindly have bought 30 of them for that exact reason.
It's a little bit nerve-wracking, but we've been really lucky. I don't think we've got one horse that's placed in these pools that hasn't met a rider to match it. Yeah, it's very good.
But you've just got to sit on the sidelines and watch. No direction, no?
No. I mean, they come and ask you as soon as they draw them what their horse's strong points are, and you try and give them as many guides as you can. But it's quite interesting because sometimes they just got to try their own way and feel what they're doing. But, no, they've all gone really well. We're very proud of how they're all gone.
You're going to breed from Percussion? You say that she's that good?
Absolutely. She's already got about, I'd say, 15 foals on the ground, and she's got four coming this year through embryo transfer.
The ones on the ground showing promise?
Absolutely. Yeah. We've actually sold the earlier ones, and the first ones of them are playing now, just starting to. She's got three stallions that are standing at various places. One's gone to New Zealand. Actually, the second one got sold to New Zealand this year as a colt foal, so, yeah, they're pretty popular.
And finally, do you think she... Well, New Zealand just upset South Africa. Mm-hmm. Do you think she can help them a little bit further?
I'm sure she can. Absolutely she can, yeah.
Sarah Grills talking about Percussion. She's the horse that everybody is in awe of and certainly can point her out amongst the crowd. She is playing very well here at the World Cup Polo Cross. Ali Felton Tate.
Eat your heart out, Winks. Amy Phillips, 10-1. We are at Warwick. The team to beat... I'm going to speak to the captain. Can they do it this afternoon, though, as well as the international competition underway here at Warwick? An interstate competition is underway as well. The Queensland Women's Polo Cross team, they're looking to defend their title after winning in Perth last year. Sydney Johnson, she's from Oakey and has kindly paused preparation. She's a bit, I can see, she wants to get back in the saddle, and I would too, given that it is such a wonderful stage out here. I mentioned that your team had done very well, but it's pretty competitive, isn't it? You've got to be right in good form to be part of your team. Hello, Sydney.
Hi. Yeah, very much so. Polo cross is not like football where you might have a core team and players come in and out. It's something that's picked for each event, and so you've got to be on the top of your game to be selected to play to represent your state.
We were talking a little bit earlier about your heritage. You grew up playing polo cross. You met your husband playing polo cross?
Yeah, so my parents both played. I met my husband and we married. His parents play as well, and they were hoping that our two sons would like to follow into our footsteps.
Wonderful. Tell me a little bit about preparation. Your team, the Queensland women's team, as you say, have you played together before?
So we had a bit of a practice run at Chinchilla Carnival about 3 weeks ago, and then we've been throwing the ball around together every morning since we've been here in Warwick.
So getting ready. How are you feeling? Nervous. We've pulled you away from prior preparation. Sorry.
I am nervous, but being nervous is good. You know, you use that to your advantage when you play. You just don't want to be too nervous.
That's right. The atmosphere here, cracking though. Wonderful crowds. It's so, it's really an atmosphere. It's palpable, really.
Yeah, very much so. There's big crowds and you want to perform well on the world stage.
Tell me, obviously, the women's under-21 team, how did they go? They lost, is that right?
Yes, they lost to New South Wales yesterday, but I feel that a few silly mistakes would be fixed up and they'll be back on track.
And you guys, obviously, I'm keeping you away from your prep now. How are you feeling going into it? We've hyped you up. We've given you guys big raps.
Yeah, no, I'm feeling good. I think that we're playing Victoria this afternoon and it'll definitely be a tough game. But, you know, we're going in feeling confident with our ability and our teammates and our horses. So, yeah.
Fantastic. All the best of luck. Sydney Johnson, she's been so kind to come and have a chat with us. She's the captain of the Queensland Open women's team, playing here as well concurrently with the World Cup that's going on. Amy Phillips, who are you yarning to?
Go Sydney, go Queensland. Thank you, Ali. Just before we check cattle markets on the Country Hour, we understand the next World Cup venue has been confirmed. Organising committee member Warwick Fraser is with me. Where's it going to? 2023,
yes, Amy. It's heading to Shongweni in South Africa. They held the cup there in 2015 and have won now the right to host it again in 2023.
It makes sense. We were talking earlier to Ross Shepherd. He said the game and the talent over there is booming.
It's phenomenal. The game has really taken off in South Africa. And South Africa have just gone ahead in leaps and bounds. And it's exciting for the game to be heading back there.
Zambia are a newish addition. Why? And they are the ones, you know, the people are talking about. Why is that?
Oh, look, they're the wild card. Zambia are old Rhodesia. And look, they've got nothing to lose. They just come in, they have a hell of a good time. Look, they've been the surprise packet. They've got it all ahead of them. They were number two in 2015, and they're the one that everyone's watching. They knocked us out in 2015. They knocked Australia out in 2015. So Thursday night, which is the night to be here at Morgan Park, that will be the night that the Australians, the Aussie Roos, take on Zambia. And I'm predicting that Australia's going to go ahead by three.
It all wraps up on Sunday, though, I understand.
It does. It all comes to a head on Sunday when we have our championship final. We'll have three championship finals on Sunday, and that will decide the world champions of polo cross.
Warwick Fraser, what an event. It's a credit to your committee to pull this off. It's, you know, only halfway through the week. You say that numbers have exceeded expectations. What is it about polo cross in this neck of the woods? I hear it's growing.
Look, it is growing. This is the epicentre of polo cross. This is the strongest polo cross region in the world.
Yep.
On the Southern Downs here, we have close to 300 polo cross players, three of the best clubs with three of the best facilities. Look, I don't know what's in the water. Maybe it's the Condamine. Look, there's something really about this region that resonates with polo cross. We love it. For the Fraser family, it's been part of the dictionary for, you know, forever. Look, there's just no better game. My old man Les talks about that he doesn't play golf, he doesn't play chess, he doesn't do the crossword of word of a morning. He just lives and breathes polo cross.
We heard that earlier. I hear the Hunter Valley is also an area where polo cross is expanding. The likes of Western Queensland, though, due to drought and population decline, some teams have disbanded. Do you see a day, though, or what efforts are being made to potentially see them come back?
Look, we are seeing a lot of programs being pushed out with polo cross, and it's been tough in those areas. Polo cross used to be really strongly supported by the pastoral companies. All of those pastoral companies had teams, and people fondly remember of polo cross at Tangoran and all those sort of places, Nokatunga, etc. Hopefully, you know, events like this, you know, it's great to look through the crowd here and you see so many people that have been involved with the game over the years. They may not be playing anymore, but they're back here, and hopefully this lights a fire in their belly to get it back going out in the bush again.
And also South Africa 2023, thank you very much for your time, Warwick Fraser, organising committee member. Let's go straight to cattle markets now. Let's head to the Dalby cattle sale. I hear numbers are down.
There was a large reduction in numbers to 1,365 head at Dalby today. The usual buyers were in attendance and operating across all categories. Prices responded to the short supply, with most classes improving. Medium weight yearling steers to feed sold to a dearer trend, and medium weight yearling heifers to feed were in demand. Cows experienced improvements of 9 to 11 cents and up to 13 on the plain condition lines. Lightweight yearling steers to restockers made to 302.2, medium weight yearling steers to feed made to 292.2 to average 276, some returning to the paddock at an average of 292, made to 296.2. Heavyweight yearling steers to feed averaged 287 and made to 292, and medium weight yearling heifers to feed averaged 258 and made to 262.2. Medium weight yearling heifers to the trade made to 265.2, most around 262. Medium weight two score cows averaged 184 and made to 194, and good heavy cows made to 242.2 in pen lots, with most around 230. This has been Trevor Hess from MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service.
Let's head to Charters Towers, where Mick Kingham says it's a similar story there with reduced numbers.
Good afternoon. A reduced yarding of 1,211 cattle were offered in Charters Towers, 429 fewer than last sale. With less than 50 prime cattle on offer, buying panel was reduced to one processor, two regular feeder buyers and several local and western restockers. One larger line of northern steers were on offer, along with several lines of local store steers and heifers. Young steers to restockers improved by up to 15 cents, while yearling steers to restockers averaged 11 lower, and lesser quality types to feed were less than more than 20 cents. Improved quality young heifers improved by up to 30 cents, while yearling heifers to feed, we improved on last sale. The small number of Lightweight steers returning to the paddock sold at 281 to average 264, and heavier types to average 268. Light yearling steers to restockers sold at 264 to average 257, and steers above 280 kilo average 247 cents a kilo. Good quality young and light heifers sold at 180 cents multiple times, with medium weights to feed selling to 210 to average 207. A small number of demuscled cows sold to 191 to average 178, and a small selection of grown steers to slaughter sold to 240 cents a kilo. This is Mick Kingham from Charters Towers for the National Livestock Reporting Service.
Mick, thank you. God, it's been lovely to broadcast here from Warwick at the Polo Cross World Cup. Ali Felton-Taylor, some results just in.
A quick update, men's New South Wales versus Victoria. New South Wales won 23-22. Gee, it was close.
Good luck, New Zealand, Ireland, coming up next. That's all from the Country Hour. It's 1 o'clock news time.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.